Good afternoon, and welcome to the Green Thumb Show. I'm Lee Murray, your reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thanks for joining us, and Happy New Year, 2026. For BetterHomesAndGardens.com, the 2026 Flower and Plant of the Year represent joy and prosperity. These picks from 1-800-Flowers.com promise to bring positive energy into your home. By Sophia Beams. The time has come for 1-800-Flowers.com to choose its 2026 Flower and Plant of the Year. The flower and plant of the year are chosen based on their symbolic meaning, as well as consumer and floral trends. Whether you're gifting the flower of the year or purchasing a new houseplant for yourself, the flower and plant of the year are intended to represent positive feelings and futures, bringing good luck and inspiration into your space. Here's which botanicals 1-800-Flowers.com is spotlighting for 2026 to add a little extra joy and good fortune into your home. Flower of the Year. The 2026 Flower of the Year is a delphinium, a tall, elegant flower. It adds stunning texture and height to floral arrangements, a unique element that no one will be able to take their eyes off of. You'll spy delphiniums in rich purples, soft blues, and creamy white hues, creating arrangements that are as versatile as they are beautiful. 1-800-Flowers.com chose the delphinium because it represents hope, elevation, and positivity towards the future. A delphinium arrangement makes for the perfect housewarming gift, graduation bouquet, or way to celebrate a new job. It's also a beautiful way to shower your loved ones with well wishes of hope and growth. 1-800-Flowers.com offers a variety of arrangements that showcase the delphinium. Use this flower to make a statement on your kitchen counter or dining room table. It even adds serenity to a spa bathroom. Blend its blue and purple hues with soft pink and yellow flowers for a warm springtime arrangement, or keep things calm and wintry with gentle shades of light blue and white. Plant of the Year. The delphinium isn't the only botanical star of the coming year. 1-800-Flowers.com has also chosen a 2026 Plant of the Year, and it's the best choice for ringing in the new year with good fortune and positive energy. The money tree often features a braided trunk with its large, shiny green foliage on top. Each leaf is made up of five leaflets, representing the five elements of balance. Caring for a money tree is surprisingly simple. Give it regular watering every week or two after the soil is dried out, and give it plenty of indirect light. As the tree grows, you don't even have to prune it if you don't want to. Just allow its leaves to form a small canopy over its trunk. The money tree is available in three different sizes, small, medium, and large, on 1-800-Flowers.com. Send one as a gift to wish someone good luck and prosperity, or place a money tree in your own home to inspire balance and positivity. Find the money tree and delphinium prominently featured across 1-800-Flowers.com's arrangements and plant offerings this year. Start 2026 off right by grabbing a few for your own home. Here's an article that appeared in the January issue of Sun Lake Splash. Carnations Always Pleasant to Look At, by Danette Hunnell. People come into our valley and think it's impossible to plant anything in January. But that's not true. Carnations are lovely perennials that like cool temps as long as they have constant sun. They can thrive year-round with adequate water, a bit of fertilizer, and a shade cloth or screen during our extreme summers. An inexpensive small green plant with either white, pink, or red buds is excellent planted in the ground. Just cover from the January frost below 32. It's best to use a starter plant rather than seeds at this time of the year. Water lightly for only the first 5 days. A mature plant will grow between 1.3 feet to 3 feet tall and spread from 6 inches to 1 foot. After established, they need full sun and require water only about every 10 days until mid-February. No need to fertilize until February if using liquid, and then only once a month until the heat begins in May. Then it should be every 3 weeks through November. If using a slow-release fertilizer, it's only necessary to fertilize once a year and apply in early April. Place the fertilizer around the base of the plant only, avoiding leaves and stems. Fertilizer should be the NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium based. Pruning is simply clipping yellow, withered leaves to increase ventilation and reduce infection. Pop off any shriveled flowers, too. Although not absolutely necessary, watering at night is a good idea, as the cooler evenings allow the plant to take up water and maintain the moisture longer before the daily sun begins to dry the soil. Check the soil where carnations live approximately every 2 years. It should be well draining, so mix sand or gravel into it. Use caution with pets, as carnations can be toxic for animals. I like carnations because they're long flowering, repeat bloomers, pleasant to look at, and fairly disease resistant. Lastly, one can clip the flowers at the bottom of their stems and place in a vase indoors. They make lovely tabletop arrangements. From BetterHomesAndGardens.com, repurpose your Christmas tree for New Year's with these simple decor ideas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Tree. Who says your Christmas tree needs to be taken down once the holidays are over? Extend its life by transforming your tree into a bona fide New Year's tree that will be the star of any holiday party. Redecorating your tree is simple, and it keeps your living room bright and cheerful long after Christmas is over. Michaels has multiple ideas for turning your Christmas tree into a New Year's tree that everyone will love, using ornaments, tree toppers, and more. How to decorate a tree for New Year's. The average Christmas tree can last up to 6 weeks or even longer with proper care. Don't take your tree to the curb until you've gotten the most possible use out of it. An extra week in your home shouldn't even be enough time for its branches to brown. If you're working with an artificial tree, New Year's is a great excuse to avoid putting it away for a little longer. First, pick a lovely color scheme. The first step is to pick a classic, recognizable New Year's color scheme to help make your holiday transition clear. Silver, gold, and blue are traditional New Year's colors that everyone is familiar with. Bright, peppy colors like hot pink and teal form a modern palette that stays relevant after Christmas is over. Next, add some sparkle. Add a little bling to your tree that's guaranteed to remind you of New Year's. Disco ball ornaments are an absolute must if you're throwing a New Year's party. You can tie in the theme around the rest of your home with sparkly silver decor. Gold or silver tree tinsel adds a party-ready touch to a classic green Christmas tree. Don't forget to replace the star on top of your tree. Display your party supplies. Instead of garlands, you can opt for a New Year's party banner to wrap around your tree. If you have spare New Year's party supplies, try incorporating them into your tree by using the New Year's glasses, bead necklaces, and party horns to decorate the branches of your former Christmas tree. Use undated decorations. When you're picking out decor and party supplies, consider opting for items that don't display the exact year on them. This way you can store your New Year's tree decorations with your other Christmas decor and reuse them from year to year. Even used party supplies like hats and headbands are perfect for decorating your New Year's tree all over again next year. Busy cleaning up confetti on New Year's Day? Save it to fill glass ornaments with. These will make adorable confetti popper-inspired baubles for your New Year's tree. If you're not a fan of confetti, you can try using cut-up scraps of used holiday wrapping paper, which will look like bits of confetti from afar. The only question we have on our minds is how far can this trend go? If you just can't let go of your holiday tree after New Year's, then maybe a Valentine's tree trend is in your future. From the Arizona Republic, mycorrhizal fungi has benefits for soil and plants. By Abby Dowling. On the shelves in your local garden supply store, you may have noticed products labeled mycorrhizal fungi and wondered what their purpose is and whether they would benefit your garden. They've been touted as a cure to what ails our plants, but the research is much more nuanced. There's still more evidence needed to clarify the role that mycorrhizae play in our gardens, forests, and the food we eat, but what we know so far is that they're fascinating and important. Mycorrhizal fungi grow on and around plant roots, forming a symbiotic relationship with plants that facilitates the transportation of nutrients and waters to the host plants. Networks of mycorrhizal fungi exist in most natural settings, supporting a wide variety of plants. This is not surprising, since fungi in general are one of the largest groups of life on Earth and have colonized virtually every niche of the planet. Fungi are eukaryotic organisms, a group that includes yeasts and molds, as well as our familiar mushrooms. Fungi most likely evolved over 1.5 billion years ago and started colonizing land during the Cambrian period, around 570 million years ago. The most interesting thing about mycorrhizal fungi is that they co-evolved with plants. They have been with us since before there was an us. So what does this ancient organism have to do with you and your garden today? A lot, actually. Soil devoid of mycorrhizae cannot fully support the growth of plants that are vigorous, disease-resistant, and can handle changes in weather such as drought. We need to consider what gardening practices encourage the growth and continued survival of these fungal networks. This may be the hard part, but interesting. A large part of the task is to do less. The first piece is to understand the specific benefits mycorrhizae provide to the garden. Because mycorrhizae increase nutrient and water uptake in plants, these plants establish faster, grow bigger, and survive longer than plants without mycorrhizae. Mycorrhizae improve soil aggregation and stability, helping prevent erosion and allowing water to seep in more deeply. Healthy plants are more resistant to environmental stress, pests, and diseases, especially root pathogens such as verticillium and nematodes. Mycorrhizae colonized plants have increased tolerance to drought, salt, and heavy metals such as zinc and lead. Mycorrhizae can help prevent uptake of these toxic minerals from soil and inhibit their movement from the roots to the shoots. Mycorrhizal networks can reduce excess soil nutrients from seeping into aquatic ecosystems, improving waterway health. The second piece is to understand how mycorrhizae grow in partnership with plants. This is a natural process that rewards those who do less. Mycorrhizal spores lie dormant in coarse organic matter near the soil surface and in the soil itself. Roots of plants under nutritional stress release specific chemical cues that stimulate spore germination. Once the spores have germinated, they colonize the plant roots, and then the magic can happen. The third piece to consider is how certain actions in your garden can inhibit mycorrhizae growth. The most damaging threat to mycorrhizal health is the use of unnecessary fertilizers, especially those containing phosphate. Any activity that destroys soil structure, including excessive tilling and cultivation, will also decrease the formation and health of mycorrhizal networks. Overuse of fungicides to remove unwanted fungi from gardens and yards also kills beneficial fungi. Essentially, if you have visible fungi in your lawn or garden, leave them. Topsoil removal during construction is extremely damaging, as much of the inoculum and organic material is eliminated. Construction also compacts the soil and reduces oxygen, lowering oxygen-dependent mycorrhizal activity. I am sure that, like me, you have seen many mycorrhizal products for sale that you can add to your soil. There has been some success in inoculating sterilized container media and in repopulating soils that have been fumigated. However, studies on gardens and landscapes have found that mycorrhizal amendments are generally ineffective and unnecessary. Since most soils have at least some mycorrhizal spores already in them, if you foster the right conditions, they will continue to grow and colonize. Use a handful of soil from an existing bed to colonize a new bed. Save your money at the garden supply store. Finally, what can we do to increase mycorrhizal communities and reap the benefits in our gardens? First, soil management. Decrease or stop rototilling and double digging, which destroy fungal networks. Avoid soil compaction, as it decreases pore space and reduces oxygen availability. Avoid excessive irrigation, as this also reduces soil oxygen levels. Apply compost as a top dressing. It will find its way naturally into the soil through water movement and soil fauna activity. Let worms do the work. Finally, use natural woody mulches instead of dyed ones. They are less expensive and sometimes free. Chemical use. Avoid using fungicides. Use them as a last resort to treat serious fungal diseases. Apply fertilizer only when a soil test warrants it. Excessive fertilizer, especially phosphate, damages the mycorrhizal network. Include low-growing, drought-tolerant ground covers to act as living mulches and avoid bare soil. Planting a diverse variety of plants, trees, shrubs, flowers, herbs, and vegetables helps foster growth. Diverse planting encourages mycorrhizal networks. When you really think about how we can encourage the growth of these invaluable networks in our gardens, you will notice that the key steps actually require less work. I encourage every gardener to consider doing this. Also from the Arizona Republic, Grow Windowsill Herbs and More by Mary Janik. Does the idea of eating houseplants seem strange? Most food crops grow outdoors in warm weather, abundant rain, and ample sunshine. Sometimes, though, it's too warm, too wet, or too sunny, or you live in a studio apartment. That's when it's worth a try growing food crops indoors to, well, eat houseplants. Attention to some key elements will move the effort from trying to success, i.e. the location of the garden, growing containers, system, light, temperature, water, and nutrients. Growing food indoors presents some challenges, but there are advantages. Location, location, location. The real estate you choose for your indoor garden should consider several factors. The ideal spot should be convenient without being an obstacle. Position it near a window to use natural light or elsewhere with artificial light. Avoid ducts blowing hot or cold air to minimize temperature fluctuations. Pick a spot where the flooring can easily be cleaned and won't be damaged by water or soil. More than just pots. There are a surprising number of indoor growing systems available. Small to medium-sized containers of potting soil with drip trays can be used for herbs and leafy vegetables. Countertop herb gardens with soil pots and built-in lighting are a convenient option. There are also soil-less, sterile potting mediums like expanded clay pebbles that simplify watering and fertilizing chores. Tabletop hydroponic systems grow plants in water and include automated lighting and reminders to add nutrients. To increase yield, think vertically. Shelving, hanging planters, and hydroponic towers can be used in front of sunny windows to increase productivity per square foot. Microgreens or sprouts can be grown in compact trays on a sunny windowsill. Rotate the trays for uniform, adequate light. For those with space to spare, a grow tent accommodates larger plants in 5-gallon buckets such as tomatoes, peppers, and dwarf fruit trees. For those with space to spare, a grow tent accommodates larger plants in 5-gallon buckets such as tomatoes, peppers, and dwarf fruit trees. If you're not familiar with them, grow tents are fabric enclosures with reflective interiors, built-in ventilation, and space for grow lights. Let there be light. If your indoor edible garden has natural light for several hours a day, that may be sufficient for some herbs. However, the change of the seasons affects the sun's angle, which may impact the amount of light that comes through the window. This results in more light at some times of the year and less at other times. For most crops, supplemental lighting will be needed. How to know? Get a light meter. The University of Tennessee Extension recommends a small handheld light meter that measures foot candles. A foot candle is a value of light measurement used in photography. The number of foot candles determines what plants will grow best in these conditions. For example, 1,000 foot candles of light for 16 hours a day will be enough to grow leafy baby greens, but 2,400 foot candles are necessary to grow compact tomatoes. If that seems too complicated, pick a convenient spot and use a grow light. Light strength will then be constant, eliminating the need to check it as the seasons change. Setting the lights on a timer makes it even easier and lights the farm while you're on vacation. A grow light with 2,000 to 3,000 lumens per square foot is good for leafy greens. Fruiting plants need between 8,000 and 10,000 lumens. A lumen is another way to measure light, and 10.76 lumens equals 1 foot candle. The light quality is also an important consideration. A University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign publication explains light quality as the color of the light. Blue-green light promotes leafy growth, and red-orange light is necessary for flowering and fruiting plants. Fluorescent light emits blue spectrum light. Incandescent light is in the red-orange spectrum and emits heat. Some indoor light kits offer a choice of both kinds of lights. Watering. Avoid watering on a fixed schedule without checking the soil. Water when the top layer is dry. The amount of water and frequency of watering may vary with the seasons, even indoors. Avoid oversaturated soil, which is attractive to indoor pests like fungus gnats. Use rainwater if it's available. A gentle, well-placed fan can supplement your watering routine by providing good air circulation, thereby minimizing risk of fungus and other diseases. Fertilizing. Feed soil-based indoor gardens using the right type of fertilizer for the plant. In other words, higher nitrogen for leafy plants. Follow the label for amount and frequency. Hydroponic systems are fertilized with special premixed liquids. It's important to use these formulations because the amount of nutrients differs from soil-based fertilizers. Pest control. While you won't have to worry about rabbits eating your crops, even indoor gardens can have pests. Inspect the leaves of any plant brought into the home for signs of aphids, spider mites, mealybugs, whiteflies, leaf miners, etc. Most can be eliminated by picking them off, flushing leaves with water, or using an insecticide like neem oil or BT. What to grow? Many herbs can be grown indoors, like basil, mint, cilantro, thyme, parsley, lemon balm, oregano, and sage. If not using seedling starter plants, the University of Nevada Cooperative Extension suggests rooting 2 to 3 inch stem cuttings in 1 or 2 inches of water. Place in a sunny window and change the water regularly. After roots form, they can be planted in a container of potting mix or a soilless growing medium. Fast-growing, shallow-rooted leafy greens like lettuce, spinach, and kale can be grown indoors, according to the South Dakota State University Extension. Purchase seedlings to reach harvest stage sooner. Lettuce typically prefers cooler temperatures and somewhat less light. Another crop recommended for indoor gardening is green onions because they are low maintenance and quick growing. Try placing green onions from the grocery store in soil to grow indoors until they are needed. Fruiting plants like tomatoes and peppers require proper lighting and space. The University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign Extension recommends dwarf or patio-style tomatoes that only grow to approximately a foot or so. A fan or shaking the stems can help them self-pollinate. Some dwarf citrus can be grown indoors with enough bright light and moist soil. Again, hand pollination will likely be necessary to stimulate fruit production. And those of you who are regular listeners to this show know we feature stories each week from the terrific book, Chicken Soup for the Gardener's Soul. This story is called Flowers for a Newborn Child. It was written by Claire Bainan, and there's a quote here from Bishop Arthur Cleveland. Flowers are words which even a babe may understand. Flowers for a newborn child. It was a cold, drizzly day. Mist nudged up against the windows and doors of the house. I was adding more wood to the fire when I heard a knock at the front door. Judy was standing on the doorstep, wearing her usual faded green sweatpants, a hand-knitted sweater, and a silver tiara. She only wore her tiara on special occasions. She held a large, crumpled plastic bag in her arms. We smiled warmly at each other. "Flowers for the newborn child," she declared, holding out the bag. I welcomed my friend and accepted the package. There was no sign of any flowers, but I said thank you anyway. Judy has always been full of surprises. If she said she brought flowers, then sooner or later, flowers would appear. I've never known anyone even vaguely like her. She has always approached things differently, danced to her own tune. At 76, she still considered such practical things as umbrellas or raincoats unnecessary on rainy days. She would simply stride out into any weather, defying rain or snow. I've yet to hear of a person dissolving because of a little extra moisture in the air, she would say. That particular morning, there were tiny jewels of rain nestled in the weave of her sweater, a cascade of droplets adding sparkle to her wiry gray hair, rain still clinging to the tip of her nose. She shook her head vigorously back and forth like a dog after a swim, and then matter-of-factly straightened her tiara. "Where is the little darling?" she asked. "I'm dying to meet her, dear." I led the way to the sky-blue door at the end of the narrow hall. We both looked in, barely breathing. The curtains in the little room were open. Low square windows framed a dripping wisteria vine in full flower. My daughter lay fast asleep in her grandfather's wicker baby basket. She was loosely swaddled in a cotton blanket. From the walls around her, pale pink and blue sheep grazed peacefully in her newborn baby landscape. I looked at Judy. She was gazing intently at my child. At first she said nothing, and then she whispered, "Alessandre, Alessandre." She leaned over the wicker basket, ran her knotted brown hands lightly across Alessandre's pale, sleeping cheek. Judy's bright eyes shone at the sight of a smudge of black hair splayed out on the white sheet like a charcoal drawing. "I brought flowers for you, Alessandre," Judy said. She glanced briefly in my direction before she continued. "Your mother has them, dear, in that plastic bag she's holding, but these flowers are the kind that will last forever." I opened the bag and peered into it. I looked up, confused. Judy straightened herself and began to explain. "I've made her a blanket, dear. I used the wool from my sheep. I searched until I found a variety of plants and organic materials to create the brightest pigment dyes. Then I matched the first letters of the natural colors with the letters in Alessandre's name." She took the bag from me, unfolded the blanket, and scattered a summer garden into the room. I caught my breath. Alessandre stirred in her sleep. I stood entranced as I listened to Judy name the colors she had knitted into this exuberant striped blanket, a work of art that both described and spelled my first child's name. Aloe, lichen, iris, sage, alum, ultramarine, nasturtium, dandelion, red iron oxide, and English marigold. Alessandre. Judy spread her worn hand over the rainbow. Wool, the color of softest sand, separated each of the colored rows. "I dyed the wool in my tin tub, then spun it into skeins," she went on. "I used my longest, thickest needles to knit the colors. With time, the weave will stretch and the blanket will grow, just as Alessandre will." I didn't know what to say or how to say it. The blanket was more than beautiful, more than profound, more than fantastic. I gathered it in my arms and burrowed my face into it. It smelled of distant fields and lazy sheep, summer flowers, and the rich earth's perfume. I draped it lightly over my daughter as she slept. Judy bent down to kiss her gently on the forehead, and together we tiptoed out of the room. That was 14 years ago. The same small blanket that fit the wicker basket grew with the baby to fit the crib, comforted my toddler in her day bed, and followed my girl to her full-size bed. Every night, Judy's flowers snuggle close to the lovely, long-limbed young woman who is my daughter, Alessandre. That's called Flowers for a Newborn Child, written by Claire Bainan, one of the many stories that make up Chicken Soup for the Gardener's Soul. And that's a Green Thumb Show for this week for Sun Sounds Radio. I'm Lee Murray, wishing all of you a happy and healthy New Year 2026.